Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. And we're really going to be talking about mind power in the context of the brain today. We have a wonderful guest. Her name is Annette Bagnell, and she has put together a book called Kids Beyond Limits. If you have occasionally heard the terms brain plasticity, brain remodeling, and some others, I think you're going to find my conversation with Annette a very interesting one, because it not only gives hope to parents that have children that maybe have suffered some debilitating illnesses creating brain functions, or I should say brain dysfunctions, but this also can affect an adult. And if you know of someone that's gone through strokes like I have, if you've had a member of your family, this is information that can change people's lives. Annette Bagnell, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Donna. I'm very excited.
You know, I get a lot of material. I go through 400 to 600 publications a year. And
wow.
I get very discouraged sometimes because of attitudes that people in certain professional capacities will have, saying that this is limited, that's limited. And, of course, that's not where I want to go. I feel we are in one of the most critical, fast-paced, moving forward periods in medicine, in wellness. And when I got your book, I have to tell you, it sat on my table for a while. And then I picked it up because I got so many publications, and I started to read. And it was very difficult for me to put your book down. The reason being is that you had so much good information. I want people to know that internationally you have been recognized for your work with children, special needs children, and you've worked with this process for more than 30 years. You currently have the Annette Bagnell Method Facility in Marin County, California, and we'll be giving out the web information later on. But right off the bat, you tell a story about a 14-year-old boy that had severe brain damage when he was an infant. Now that is, I mean, most people, even medical professionals, will say brain damage, that's it. You're going to have a vegetable here for the rest of his or her life. And by golly, you were able to turn this 14-year-old boy around. Someone would have said it's a miracle, but you don't feel it's a miracle. You feel it's an understanding of the natural capacities of the brain. Tell us about this 14-year-old boy.
Are you talking about the first chapter?
Yes. Yes, it was in your
introduction. I'm so sorry because I have so many stories in the book. They probably sort of kind of mushed together a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter is my story about my work. Actually, we started with her when she was 13 months old. And she was diagnosed with global brain damage with a horrendous prognosis. I mean, basically, they said to put her away in an institution. She'll never do anything.
Okay, this is the girl.
And
this
she
is
was
the girl
really in a very bad shape. Yeah, I think the first thing I want to say is that, you know how they say with the funds, with money funds, past performance does not predict the future. I say present performance shouldn't be the predictor of future performance. It depends what we do. So when we look at a baby at 13 months old that can't roll over, can't sit, can't talk, her eyes are crossed, she cries all the time, her left side of the body is spastic, you know, like real bad, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very easy to feel that she's never going to do anything. And if she stays this way, that prediction would be right. What I discovered, really thousands upon thousands of times, both with children and adults, is that the moment, for me, a limitation always sort of flips into an opportunity. Because if we can communicate with the brain, connect with that person's brain, and get the brain to begin differentiating, creating new connections and new possibilities, and brains do it at a staggeringly fast rates when they do, then things start happening. The person starts learning, and once there is a little change, you can build the next change on it and the next change, and as you do it more, the brain becomes more capable at learning. It becomes a better learning brain, a better learning machine. So with Elizabeth, you know, I was very, very young when I started. She was my first child client that I never expected to work with children. And that was my good luck, and maybe her good luck too, because I didn't know what's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know what's not possible. So I went for it. And when I saw a little change, I thought, oh, she has intelligence. She's learning. So I kept going. And fast forward to today, she's married. She has 2 master's degrees, and she has her own little business.
Now, Juan, there are a number of points that you brought out relative to Elizabeth, who, as you said, was 13 months old when you were brought into contact with her. One, you just gently paid attention to the child. You saw intelligence in her eyes, but her brain and her body were not making connections. And when you became aware of that, you also noticed, and just by your own technique, you found that this little girl, 13 months old, was really paying attention. And you very gently became aware of the fact, like, her pelvis wasn't moving. In other words, you paid attention to this child. You watched what she was doing, what she wasn't doing.
Absolutely. I mean, Donna, I mean, I love how you took in or understand my book, because this is really so important. This is one, a very important departure of the way I do the work from a lot of other, you know, techniques that the practitioners are very, you know, positive people and so on. But what I do not have a program for the child. I don't say, okay, you have to do this first, this second, this third, or you're this age, then I'm going to exercise your sitting, and this age I'm going to, because that's not how healthy children accomplish their development either. What I do, I also understand that that doesn't work very well. The brain is already having a hard time making sense of itself and the body and the environment. And, you know, this month is the Autism Awareness Month, so, you know, this is another, you know, example of brains that have a really hard time to make sense of their own world. So what I do is I really closely observe the child, and I watch what is the child doing and how is the child doing what it is doing, including how it is doing its limitations, because those limitations are actually already brain patterns. Mm-hmm. So even if the child didn't intend to learn that, it has become a learned pattern. And there, I connect with the child, I feel the child, I look at what the child does, and look, where can I start doing something with the child to give a little bit of extra freedom to do, to move, to think. It depends what I'm focusing on. But observing the child, respecting where the child is, my mind is, if he could, he would. If she could, she would. So trying to force a child to do what they can't do right now is a relatively inefficient way to bring progress.
You talk about the need to communicate with the brain. And you
yes.
say neither the problem nor the solution is to be found in the muscles. Now, that flies directly in the face of many people's attitudes, and this goes way back, about let's work with the muscles. Let's make those muscles do things. And I can recall people teaching techniques where they would force the muscles to move. Now, it's good that the body moves, but you say you must communicate with the brain. So in doing that, you really have to shift your mentality about the approach, don't you?
100%. You see, when let's say, I just heard you mention you suffered from a stroke, or a child suffers from a stroke or something else happens, I don't know, brachial plexus injury, or even children with autism very often have motor coordination challenges. Mm-hmm. People don't focus on that very much, but I've seen that consistently over the years. It's right in front of us. So if the arm is spastic and the elbow is bent, it's really very inviting to try and stretch those muscles and to straighten it and to make it work, because the arm is right there in front of our eyes, right?
Right.
But that requires of us as therapists, as parents, as people, to become more enlightened. I actually think it's a form of enlightenment, because we have to back off and kind of inhibit or not follow our initial drive to try and fix and control, which is a good drive, but we have to transform it into a more enlightened version where we understand that the brain is the CEO of us. It has to form the connections, and then it controls the body. So if the brain doesn't have in it the pattern to move, to for a hand to close and open, or to open, usually it'll close if it's spastic, but to open it, it will not open it. The muscles can be perfectly fine. And the way to get the brain to do it is not by trying to force the final desired outcome. If we look at how children develop, healthy children, learning, moving from knowing from having no voluntary movement to being able to do remarkable things, they never, ever, when they're little, practice the final outcome. They always a huge amount of different little movements, and that's what I describe, as the essentials, and how they go about it, so the brain is flooded with new information. And over time, through approximations, the brain figures it out.
Mm-hmm. You have a very special story in here about a little girl. Her name is Cassie. And you met Cassie when she was 3 years old. She had suffered brain damage at birth. She had severe cerebral palsy. Her arms and legs, her entire little body, she was just such a tiny little thing. She was just so tight, and it's as if the whole body was terrified to even move, because she would have all of these erratic movements. And you knew that this child at the age of 3 was frightened, because her body, she didn't feel like she had any control over it whatsoever. What did you do with her? Because she absolutely came out of that. And when you watch anything regarding or read anything on cerebral palsy, they will say there's never going to be a change. This is something that the child or the adult is going to be stuck with this for your entire life. You took a different positioning with this child. Tell us what you did.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say one thing. There are other people working with cerebral palsy and getting improvement for the children. So today people know that when children have brain damage or cerebral palsy, there is room for improvement, just like with the autism. And I think it's important to know. When I started doing the work, there was very little that...
Mm-hmm.
And they still do it, surgeries where they cut tight muscles, and sometimes it's terrible and so on and so forth. But what I did with Cassie, what I saw is, she had really pretty much no voluntary movement, because every time she tried to move, all the muscles would contract, so it would stop her. And that was the pattern. So every time she had an intention to move, or she knew she was going to be moved, or felt she was being moved, she became tight. So that closed the conversation, right? She couldn't learn how to move. But people tried to sit her up, because they were hoping that if they sit her up enough times, somehow she will be able to sit up. And she absolutely was not able to really do it because all the underlying patterns that lead a child to be able to sit up were missing. So when she was set up, her muscle, you know, her belly muscles get very tight. She got all very rounded, and her legs were all tight, and she just didn't dare move because if she moved her head just a little bit, she would topple over like a box. You know, she was like a rigid body, like an object. So the very, and also when we feel we are about to fall, our brain is absolutely 100% busy with trying to stop us from falling. It's a self-preservation. You know, it comes mm-hmm. to the foreground. So there's no room for learning or improvement, and the child learns fear. We learn our experience. So this is really important for parents and therapists to understand that whatever you choose to do with a child in trying to help them, do it in a way that they feel safe, that they feel seen, that they don't feel like something is wrong with them. Even though we try to help them, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. They are where they are. Just like there's nothing wrong with a 3 month old that can't jump rope. You know, they mm-hmm. are where they are. So I, what I did with her is, first of all, I told the parents and I myself just didn't put her sitting. I mean, we stopped doing it. She couldn't do it. And then, you know, gradually there was more differentiation, more freedom of movement. And I think there's in the story a part there that really demonstrates the relationship, the very intimate and powerful relationship between the brain mapping and what the child can do. Because Cassie really improved. It was very, very heartening. You know, her eyes got coordinated better. Her hands, she could move better. She could sit a lot better. She was able to roll. I mean, she got the feeling of her own body and movement. And she got happier, and her speech improved. Her voice got stronger. A lot of very, very positive changes.
Okay, I want to stop you for just a minute, because one of the things that you did, which I thought was just extremely significant. You drew a dog on her knee. You drew a red dog, and you drew it very slowly. And her concentration was entirely on what you were drawing on her knee. And
absolutely,
that made new brain patterns for her.
Yes, but you know, the reason I had the idea to do it is because everything improved except her legs. They kept being tight together all the time, no matter what I did. And, you know, it took probably a few weeks. I don't remember because I didn't plan it, but I couldn't figure out why the legs kept being really tight together. And one day it dawned on me that I and everybody else saw that Cassie had two legs, but for Cassie, she had only one leg. Because she always moved that leg together, so her brain mapped that those two legs as one leg. And do you know that Dr. Michael Merzenich and his team did research on rats where when they were born, they tied their hind legs together so the rats learned to move with the legs always together, and then they checked their brains and found that those two legs were mapped as one leg.
Mm-hmm.
And that was many years after I worked with Cassie. And they did it to show how you can induce cerebral palsy. That means if you make things, you know, map as if they're one instead of two or three or five or whatever, like fingers, then they get spastic and you cannot move them separately.
Mm-hmm.
You have to differentiate them in the brain. So by drawing a picture on one knee, and she got really interested, but I didn't tell her you have two legs because this would have meant nothing to her. But I drew a cat or a dog, whatever I did first, and then I showed her the other knee and said, oh, this one doesn't have a drawing. Do you want a drawing? And then when she had two drawings, I could move the cat. I could tell a story with those two knees, and she very quickly learned to recognize and feel her two legs separately so she could start controlling their movement separately.
And then she ended up pulling herself up. She started walking. See, I think that's what's so significant about your publication, because the brain is so very plastic. The old, old myth that your brain dies after a certain age, just forget it, after the age of 27, everything's going to turn putrid and gray, and you're not going to have any memory when you're 95, and you're going to be nothing but a shriveled up mental prune. Well, believe it or not, it doesn't work that way.
And I've always known that to be the case, but to be able to really understand, and that's what your book, Kids Beyond Limits, is so valuable for, because this is, I think, something that's applicable to adults as well.
Oh,
teenagers,
100%.
It doesn't really. Yes, it's just, it's wonderful. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much.
Wonderful. Now, yeah. I want to talk about an autistic child that you have in your book. You have Ryan. He had a twin brother, Brandon. Now, mm-hmm. Ryan was the one that was autistic. His brother wasn't. He had temper tantrums. You have all of this unusual eye movement. And he was a preemie. He and his brother both were preemies. But what I found so interesting is that when the children were brought to you, you watched them. You didn't make any judgment. You didn't try to put the child in a box or the parents in a box. There's no blame game here. It's just observation. And apparently you had a wonderful teacher. But this little boy, Ryan, didn't even know that he existed. And when I read that, I thought, what a profound observation. So obviously you have a very strong intuitive side as well. You are, like many women, you have this empathy, and not a sympathy where you get into stuff, but an empathy of observation, whether it's non-judgmental. And you saw the disturbing behavior, but you said, there's got to be a way of dealing with this child. And you had to watch him until you could figure something out. The parents were amazed because they watched their son change right in front of their eyes. And for him, you put your hands on either side of his pelvis, and you had him go up against his father because Ryan didn't even know that he was moving. How did you discern this?
Well, I saw it because he had this movement where, you know, first when the father was holding him in his arms, and then I asked the father to sit with him, Ryan would, like, every few seconds, it was like a loop, like a, you know, like a broken record, as we say, mm-hmm. even though there are no more records, but, you know, would arch his back and throw his head violent, you know.
Right. Hi, this is Donna. I'm sorry. We had one of those little gnomes with technology that decided to give us a hiccup here. Annette Baniel is with me today. This is Donna Sebo. We're talking about Kids Beyond Limits. This is an extremely powerful book because it changes your mental paradigm. Annette, you were able to work with Ryan in this very special way. His parents were just incredulous about what they were witnessing. I mean, this is so, has to be so satisfying to you and so very, very rewarding. I really think that you have a segment in your book that really is something that anyone can learn from. And if someone has a child that is been diagnosed with something like autism, or somebody puts a label on them, and these labels just anger me, no end, like attention learning deficit. What it has to do with is the brain body, the mind body brain connection. And this is what you say. You say movement with attention to things you were already doing with your child, whether it's feeding your child, changing diapers, whatever it is that you're doing. You want to do what you're doing with your child, and you want to be mindfully present with it. And you're not wanting the child to pay attention to you. You want your child to become aware of his or herself so that he feels this. And that is another thing. I don't believe that people, if they really are good observers, can miss how you can have a little four-month-old. I've seen them at 9 weeks. And they're just aware of everything. They want to touch everything. They want to feel everything. And when you're singing to them or you're talking to them and you touch their face, their little ears, the bottom of their feet, you tickle them. There's all of these movements that go on because that's what they're supposed to do naturally. And this is what you bring forward, is being mindfully attentive with this and with parents. You have so many wonderful stories in here. What do you feel is one of the greatest lessons that parents learn when they're working with you and their children, their child or their children?
I think that the first lesson that the parents get is actually that their child is brilliant. And the fact that they have limitations doesn't mean that they're not intelligent or couldn't become intelligent, and that they have a potentially brilliant brain. It's just that we need to provide the conditions to support the brain to sort of like kickstart it in a certain way, because the trauma or whatever is going on, or if it's biochemistry in the brain, whatnot, is interfering with the spontaneous ability of the brain to do what it would have been doing otherwise. I can tell you, Dana, that I've been doing this for a very long time, and I've seen so many kids, so many ages, so many different conditions, and almost always the child responds to these essentials and begins learning. As that's one of my essentials, this is the learning switch. It's like really turning on the brain, turning it into a learning brain. People confuse the presenting limitations as indications of the potential that is in the child to do well, just like with Elizabeth. And that is a very big mistake, because we are built to grow. All children have to learn everything they're ever going to do. This is a huge job for every child. A child with special needs has extra demand, but they still have a brain. Even when there's been brain damage, unless very extensive, and even with that, we've had some unbelievable successes, but maybe you don't reach as high a level of functioning as with other kids. But kids improve. Kids learn. And we need to learn how to access, communicate with that brain so it will do its job as well as it can. And forcing the child and doing tons of repetitions and so on numbs the brain. It actually drives in more the limitations very often. And then we say, well, of course they have this limitation because they have this condition. And on some level it's true, but if they had other environment, they could have done a lot better. And so I want parents to know that their child is a lot more intelligent than they seem, that they have a brain that is built to learn and will do that under the right conditions, and to really back off from trying to fix the child, to not be so fearful, but to rather connect and love their child. And all the essentials also are very loving ways of being with another human being. And you keep mentioning it. I observe, well, it's a form of respect. I don't know that I know what that person needs. I first have to notice where they're at. And I know that I cannot change another human being. I cannot take somebody else and change them. All I can do is provide the conditions that gives them and their brain the information they need, and they will change. And that's when the kids and the adults perform miracles. They really do perform miracles.
I really like something in your book as well, and you call it slow learning. I had a discussion with a group of people last night about children and education. And the Danish people, they have a process with their education where they let their children go out regardless of the weather. They bundle them up, and it could be 40 below, and they'll take them outside and they let them play. And the children explore. The adults there to keep an eye on them, but they don't try to stop them from doing things. And I was talking with one person about this specifically, and he related a very interesting experience to me. He was talking with a Native American, and he said that it was traditional with this tribe that if they had campfires or something like this where the young were around, that if the youngster walked up to the fire, they didn't get paranoid about it. They just watched. And if the youngster touched something hot, they didn't have to tell him not to touch something hot again.
But they allowed them to
make the one-time learning, yes.
That's right. You learn really fast. Now, they didn't want them to throw themselves in the fire. That's not it. But children are curious.
Yeah.
So they were there. They'd watch them. And these children grew up very well balanced, very, very, very strong and very stable. And the focus of the conversation was, in the Western way of thinking, it's as if we're supposed to do everything really fast, and if you don't get it in 30 seconds, by God, you must be stupid. I mean, I hear all kinds of remarks made about people. If they're not into doing the latest thing with a smartphone or something else, well, you're just not with it. And I have noticed that if people don't take time to be quiet as adults, they're nervous wrecks. And when you have children, if you don't allow them to discover things and allow that slow is not bad, it doesn't mean they're stupid. Like you said, they have got genius within them. But you say, all right, let's check this out. Let's do that. That's a way of learning. And I just think the material in your book, and one statement you say, one of the most significant ways humans are different from all other mammals is in how slowly we develop. And I think that that is such a profound statement. We still are expecting add water mix, you got a powder, you swallow it, you got it. It doesn't work that way because the brain has to evolve so that there's the association. I think that your work not only gives hope for parents that have children with disabilities, but I think also it gives hope for adults that have challenges and makes people aware that we can look at things differently. Now, I know we're out of time, Annette. Your website is AnnatteBanyal.com. Let me spell that out for you, those of you listening. AnnatteBanyal.com. It's her name, the word method.com. AnnatteBanyal.com. Annette, I wish you the best with this, and I just am so excited because I think for the first time you have put into writing something that can benefit people of all ages, and it is just a wonderful accomplishment. Thank you for sharing this time with me.
Thank you so much, Donna. I really enjoyed my time with you. It was actually a very nice visit. Thank you so, so much, and I hope it will reach lots of people.
So do I. Annette Banyal has been my guest. Book is Kids Beyond Limits. This is Donna Sebo. Check out our website, AnnatteBanyalMethod.com. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic. Safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here we go. Here's the toll-free number for you to call in, if you so desire. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or an initial. Let me share with you what I perceive, and then after that, you can ask me a question about anything that is important to you. Well, I
just have a lot of odds and ends that I wanted to share with you today. And because of conversations that I've had just in the past few days, finding work is really important. And so many of us will hear time and time again, oh, if you love what you do, the money's going to follow. And many times I encounter people that are so frightened. And in today's world, there is this disposition that, oh, we've just got to be just so cautious about everything. Well, let me tell you something. Our founding fathers were not very cautious, and they put their lives on the line. A lot of them lost everything because they believed in something that was bigger than themselves. And they said, this I'm doing not just for myself, but I'm doing it for others. Well, one of the things we need to remember is that life is always challenging. If ever you want to see how challenging it is, just spend a day within the environment of Mother Nature. With all of her glorious beauty, life is still a tough proposition. There aren't any shortcuts, and there aren't any magic wands. I haven't seen any laying around lately that create the changes that so many times we may dream about or fantasize about. When it comes to life, we have to be assertive about ourselves. And I know that was something that was really tough for me to get. That wasn't easy for me, because I was taught that a young lady just didn't do things like that. And of course, there's the adage I'd hear, the squeaking wheel gets the grease. Mm-hmm. Sometimes and sometimes not. Sometimes I'd see the squeaking wheel get severely damaged in the long term. So what can you do if you become aware of what you really are interested in? If you focus on your strengths. I think of someone that I was chatting with just recently who's very, very talented young man. Very talented young man. In his early 30s, this is someone that just has this super drive, that is out there, excellent salesperson, just really is natural, but discovered that he had a good business head, too. And what his greatest gift is, empowering people. Well, he's become very, very successful at that. And now he wants to go from being concerned about money, because he's traveled all over the world. He's had a very, very good positioning with a company he really adores. But he said, now it's not meaning so much to me. Now he's got a new journey. And we were talking about this, and he's out there exploring. He's out there looking. And what's different from this young man, with most of the people I know, is that he's not afraid to stick his neck out. Statement about the turtle, if you don't stick your neck out like the turtle, you're never going to go anywhere. A turtle doesn't travel unless its head's outside of its shell. And it's the same with us. So what do you need to do to be able to be that person that when you are interviewed or you're talking about your skills, that people are going to say, I want to know more about you? What do you do? Well, if you want to be considered exceptional in whatever field you're doing, whatever it is that you have a passion for, one of the biggest, strongest components is trust. Have you ever met someone that when you're around them, you go, I don't know what it is, but I just don't trust? Have you ever been around someone like that? You can't put your finger on it, but there's just something about that individual. You really can't get away from that edginess. So what you want to do, you want to make sure that you are a trustworthy person. What does that take? That takes integrity with yourself, because if you have integrity with yourself, you're not going to violate that level with anyone else, because you are going to be that integrity. You're also going to be someone that is not afraid to daydream. Someone that's not going to be afraid to look at challenges and say, well, let's see what we can do with them. I'd like to give it my best shot. Let's see what we can do. You also want to be someone, because someone trusts you and you're willing to try something different, you're also going to be a person that has a sense of commitment about life and about what you do. And serving, being of service in life doesn't mean you're a doormat. Took me a long time to learn that one. Being of service means that you give your highest and your best at any time, wherever you might be, whether it's in the grocery store, at a job, but you're always giving your highest and best. And the next one is being responsible. You need to be responsible. You need to be unafraid of telling someone that you've made a mistake or that you've goofed. If you really have a major screw-up in your life, and if you're behind it, don't put the blame game on someone else. Acknowledge it. Don't be afraid to do that. Believe it or not, people don't see you as a weakling when you do. They see you otherwise, really, if you have integrity. And I'm not talking about lying. I'm talking about really having integrity. They're going to say, thank you for being honest with me. I appreciate that. I know of a man who worked for a company, and as it was a truck line. And this gentleman was known for his integrity. Now, the company he was working for did not have that particular standard. The people, a company is only the people that run it. And the upper management told him to lie to one of their customers about a particular shipment. And he said, I don't feel comfortable doing it. They said, this is what you're to do. Well, he listened. He made the excuse for whatever reason. Well, the excuse grew to be an astronomical mess. As it turned out, he went back to the person that he had originally lied to. And he said, you need to know something. I didn't tell you the truth. I take full responsibility for it. And I'm very sorry. If you choose not to do business with this company ever again, I understand it. The man on the other end of the phone was quiet for a moment. And he said to this gentleman, he said, I appreciate your honesty, but I want you to know, you should never, ever do this again. And this gentleman said after that, he never, ever lied to anyone. But he didn't put it off on the company. He said, I violated my integrity. I allowed someone else to talk me into this. He said it was my fault, my responsibility. Focusing on solutions. Now, in that case, his solution was the truth. It's always a good one. Sometimes it's excruciating or painful, but it's a good one. And what you want to do is remember, in your life, you're going to want to build relationships. These relationships can open doors for you. You never know when that's going to happen. So when you're out there and you're in the job market and you're very anxious and you're very stressed, be honest with yourself. There's plenty of work out there. You don't need to lie. You don't need to cheat. You don't need to steal. You don't need to make anything up. All you have to do is be with integrity with yourself. And I can guarantee you somebody's going to want you on their team. But I'll tell you something else, too. If you don't open your mouth and let people know that you're looking, and if you don't keep yourself open for opportunity, it may come in guises you'd never imagine. Well, you have an option. You can sit in your pity pot. Personally, pity pots are very uncomfortable, and most people get bored with the conversations you have when you're in them. So be aware, take responsibility for who you are, and recognize that life is giving you an opportunity for challenge and for change. Pick it up. Take it. Move with it. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, I've got some goodies to share with you. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. If you want to give me a buzz and chat with me, this is the time to do it. 888-627-6008. I want to share with you two items. Very important. Number one, my showtime is changing to 9 a.m. Pacific time as of the 1st of May. That's right. Before we know it, May 1, the Donna Sebo Show is going to be heard at 9 a.m. Monday through Friday right here on BBS, still live. Number two, my Quantum Mind 3 class is coming up this Saturday. I am so excited. We still have a few spaces open. If you would like to be a part of this wonderful class, now this class is being held in Bridgeport Place, and this is in University Place, Washington. And if you'd like to come to the class, give me a call. This class, we're going to be talking about Chinese medicine in the first section. The second section of the class, and by the way, the first one is being taught by Robert Newman. The second one is by me. The second portion is about dream interpretation. We're also going to be doing mind exercises. You're going to find out how talented you really are. So if you'd like to be a part of this class, the charge is $59.95. If you call me in advance, it is $69.95 at the door. So please, give me a call, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Details, driving directions, everything. You can find out about it. Go to the web. Check out my newsletter. There's a lot of information in there. But won't you join us? It's from 10 until 4 on Saturday. It is a great way. Heck, we're going into the tax deadline time. Why not spend the day investing in yourself? It is absolutely wonderful, and I love to teach. So give me a call at 253-582-5604. And for those of you in New York and in Alaska, New York, I am going to be there the 27th and the 28th. I'll be available for private appointments. Also in Alaska, I'll be in Alaska from May 1st to May 7th, both in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And I'll be giving you more information as we get closer to those locations. Anyway, give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Well, I know so many of you, because of the holiday this past weekend, you may have a lot of chocolate around. Well, I just have to share with you some facts and information about chocolate. Now, we all know it's good stuff, but here are some little tidbits that I think you might enjoy. If you have a tendency to have a sensitive stomach, use dark chocolate. Do you know it has been used by various cultures to help treat digestive problems? Ladies, hot flashes, night sweats, woohoo, chocolate ice cream. Did you want to hear that or did you not want to hear that? Yes, chocolate has compounds in it that balances hormones and minerals. Believe it or not, I mean, an excuse to have chocolate is a good excuse, right? Right. So it's got all kinds of good stuff in it, and it's heart healthy. Chocolate milk, that's right. Forget the Gatorade or any of that kind of stuff. Have a little bit of chocolate. And if you really want to get luxurious, ladies, try it as a facial. It is yummy. What you do, you microwave dark chocolate in a bowl until it's melted, let it cool, and then apply it topically. Leave it on, and then you can rinse it off. Yep, it's going to leave your skin feeling smooth and silky. And, of course, a cup of cocoa, good for a headache, and a piece of chocolate mid-afternoon. Mm-mm. It charges the brain. Yes, don't you just love hearing about all that good stuff with chocolate? I certainly do. because well, I can't say it's the staff of life, but it's getting pretty close. I wanted to share a story with you. This is a little bit of history. I love synchronicity, and people will come up with various stories and various situations that happen, and I think it is so fascinating when these stories come about. Now, this is a story about something that occurred during the Second World War, and it was on June 5th, 1944. It occurred at an airfield in England. Now, paratroopers by the hundreds were preparing for their first assignment under a particular major general. His name was Maxwell Taylor, and it was the U.S. 101st Airborne Division. Now, all of the soldiers, they were carrying 80 pounds of gear, and aircraft, the engines were up, they were roaring, those propellers were twirling with intensity, ready for takeoff. There were 6,638 parachutists, and they were on C-47. Keep in mind, 6,638 parachutists. Now, they were on their way to Normandy. Planes took off. These young men knew that they were going to be dropped behind the German lines. On one of the planes, there was a private. His name was Robert C. Hillman. He was from Manchester, Connecticut. He was green. He had never seen action before. Now, everybody in the battalion, of course, they were just like sardines on those planes. They were inspecting their silk parachutes. They were inspecting them because if it didn't work, they were dead. Now, failure of a chute to open, that wasn't something you wanted to have happen. Well, this young man, Private Hillman, was very pleased, because his parachute had been assembled in his hometown. The name of the company that put together the parachutes was the Pioneer Parachute Company. Now, on board was a correspondent, a war correspondent, a reporter. His name was Wright Brown. He was covering all of this that was going on, this assault at Normandy, for NBC. And Hillman was so happy and just smiling, because he told Brown that he knew that his parachute, one of 1 million manufactured by dozens of firms, destined to be distributed around the world, was going to be just fine for him. Well, Wright wanted to know why. He said, how do you know this? He said, well, my mom is an inspector in the Pioneer plant. And he said, see, these are her initials on my chute's inspection tag. I know I'm going to be just fine. Amazing stories. They're true. Amazing nonetheless. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're just about out of time. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't let anybody ever take away your right of choice. Your mind belongs to you. You are a unique individual. Take time. Slow down a little bit. Be aware of who you are and what you're doing. And understand that this is your moment, whoever you are, wherever you are, right here, right now, is a good time in your life. Appreciate it, bless it, and then move forward to the greatness that you know that you can demonstrate. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.